Happy Monday night. It's the Fan pregame on SportsCenter, SportsNet 590, The Fan. We got a 90-minute show tonight, jam-packed, five guests joining us on the docket tonight. Leadoff hitter will be Jeff Merrick. For Merrick Mondays, Hyman hits 50 President's Trophy races smushed together. And he mentioned a new name for a Hart Trophy consideration, which we'll have to get him to explain because I don't know if we're both on board yet, but you know, it's Jeff Merrick. He's hipster hockey.
He's got some splaining to do. Big sigh of relief today for the Toronto Blue Jays and fans of the Blue Jays. Kevin Gausman did Kevin Gausman things in a Jays uniform today in Florida, elsewhere among Blue Jays. News items, Vogelbach, Clement, Schneider, all make the team. BNS in studio in about a half hour to discuss everything Blue Jays.
We're going to have Mike Halford join us ahead of a playoff clinching scenario tonight for the Vancouver Canucks versus the LA Kings. That's Monday Night Hockey tonight at 9 p.m., but he'll join us around 6:30.
And the wrap season continues. We'll have Smith and Jones and the game a little later on. So Smith and Jones in about an hour before Nets and Raptors tonight. Dennis Schroeder back. It's almost like he never left because his family is still here. But the Raptors' 10-game losing streak, it's not great. But we'll try to find some positives. Clean some positives with Smith and Jones.
Okay, before we get into Kevin Gausman's start, which is really important for Blue Jays fans, we just heard from Shohei Ohtani through a different interpreter, which is very key in the story. Who just talked briefly ahead of I guess whatever they got going on in Dodgers world, but an important piece of context. We obviously know that there's some gambling allegations happening with Shohei Ohtani's former interpreter who's been fired from the Los Angeles Dodgers. So some direct quotes that are coming out right now. About 10 minutes ago he spoke. I'm just going to read them to you. Ohtani said through his interpreter that he is saddened and shocked that somebody he trusted has done this. He's talking of his former interpreter, of course, who is alleged of massive theft. Quote, I never agreed to pay debt or make payments to the bookmaker. Quote, I never bet on baseball or any other sports or never asked anyone to do it on my behalf. Quote, to summarize, I am beyond shocked. It's really hard to summarize now how I'm feeling. In conclusion, Ipe has stolen money from my bank account and told lies.
So that's pretty strong stuff. Like, I don't know necessarily what we were expecting. However, I did expect either
way.
I don't think I was expecting this. Well, that's the problem, though. Like, if he was softening the blow whatsoever, then you're opening the door to be lumped into this entire thing.
And again, cut ties.
The one real important thing is that gambling not legal in California. Mm-hmm. So if you tie yourself to gambling in California when you've done something that is technically illegal, and even if there was any nefarious action going on, I think he'd have to take this stance because otherwise you're just admitting to committing a crime. So I kind of feel a little less based on the comments and I guess sort of the tone that he may or may not have been, or he may have been connected to it. It does really seem like he just got taken for a ride by someone he trusted, which is very sad. And I guess the sad story is actually the best story for baseball, unfortunately, in this case.
Yeah, I think you have to have zero connection to being involved with this person moving forward. You have to have zero connection to even admitting that you do gamble, I guess, at this point, even though, you know, he could certainly gamble, but not in the state that he lives and plays in. So that makes things a bit more difficult. But to say, I never agreed to pay any debt or to make any payments to the bookmaker and never bet on baseball or any other sports or asked anyone else to do it on my behalf. So he's being very adamant that he's not interested in the gambling connection. He's not been a part of it. And that Ipe stole and told lies.
Shohei has officially distanced himself from the situation. You want to talk a little bit about Kevin Gausman before we get Merrick on?
Yes.
The quick rundown on today. Big development for the Toronto Blue Jays. Of course, Kevin Gausman was shut down for shoulder fatigue. Today, struck out 7 Pirates, flirted with 97 with his fastball. Splitter was dialed in. Shai Davidi writing today, barring a surprise, he should be ready to start either Sunday's opening series finale at the Rays or Monday's series opener at the Astros. Would likely have 70 to 75 pitches for a start Monday. And guess the stretching out process would continue while the regular season was underway, which I think is the best case scenario for Blue Jays fans. Yes, it's not ideal that he's not there on the first day, on opening day, and ready to fire 110 pitches if necessary. But Kevin Gausman not missing a start, it seems like, is very, very possible, which is a great thing for the Blue Jays.
Oh, best news probably you could have got on opening week in terms of someone who's supposed to be a major part of your rotation, who is the AL Cy Young favorite. You know, thanks to Garrett Cole as well for not being in the picture for the next couple of weeks. But Gausman being as close to Gausman to start this season, where the Blue Jays are kind of up against it early on. They don't have an easy start. They need him to be a factor in. It sounds like he might not miss anything. Is super important for Blue Jays fans. I think today you saw the Gausman that we've all come to love and appreciate on that roster, because he delivers and gives you a level of confidence and composure that this Blue Jays roster is going to need through the start. So we're going to talk more Blue Jays, of course, with Ben Nicholson-Smith, who's going to join us around 6:30 in studio. But let's talk to Jeff Merrick. It's Merrick Monday, and we love to have him. How's it going, Jeff?
I'm not so sure we're getting enough water to the village on this Ohtani story.
Oh,
yet.
No. What are your thoughts, Jeff?
I don't know. I'm still wondering how the interpreter had that much access to that much of Ohtani's money. I'm sure that's something that will come up eventually. I don't know. This one, does this one pass the smell test to either of you two guys, or are there still many outstanding questions? Namely, how did the interpreter allegedly have this much access to this much of Ohtani's money?
Well, I'm not going to begin understand rich people, but I do think rich, powerful people who don't do anything but play baseball and sleep might have people doing financial things for them, and I guess Ipe was in the trust
their
tree, and maybe Ipe. Yeah,
maybe
honestly,
he's like also his
but
accountant.
It's like close confidant, right? So I okay. maybe the translator had a little too much power, and that is ultimately the big mistake Shohei made. But maybe that's being too kind to Shohei Ohtani.
I was born at night. I wasn't born last night.
Okay.
I'm still going to wait this one out.
Okay, Merrick, leaving the door open.
His next Ring Fries column will be about interpreters and gambling.
Listen, I mean, I don't follow baseball closely. I'm a baseball fan. I enjoy baseball. It's always on in the house here. And so I have friends that cover it and friends that work for various teams. And there's a healthy dose of skepticism around MLB. Again, just from the people that I'm in contact with. But we'll see. We'll see where this heads.
Don't think you're the only one. Let's ask you about the Vancouver Canucks.
Yes.
They're a big game tonight against the Los Angeles Kings, 9:00 tonight on Sportsnet.
They
have a chance to be the first team to clinch a playoff spot. What is the main reason for you that they're leading the pack right now?
You know, we talk so much about Rick Tocchet, and he's, you know, a favorite for the Jack Adams this year as NHL Coach of the Year, and I think that's all legitimate. And you see that, well, first of all, the Vancouver Canucks, outside of what's happened with Thatcher Demko and most recently Elias Lindholm, they've basically stayed healthy all season. It's a really good team when healthy, as we found out. And the other thing, and, you know, Ailish, you played at a very high level. You understand this more than Justin and I, certainly. You know, when a coach comes in and gives you a sort of foundation of structure, whether you're Nils Höglander, whether you're Elias Pettersson, whether you're Quinn Hughes, you know, anybody on that Vancouver Canucks team, once you have that foundation clearly established, then you can kind of paint. Like, look at what Rick Tocchet has been able to do with the Vancouver Canucks, and it's kind of like he's put the frames around the painting and then let the painter go ahead and paint their masterpiece, and that's what Vancouver has done so far. Number one team in the NHL, tied with the Rangers, 98 points. You mentioned off the top, there's seven teams on top of the NHL that are you know, separated by one single point. I can't remember an NHL season this deep into March and that being a fact, but here we are. You know, I think that there's a structure that this Vancouver Canucks team can fall back on when things are bad. There's no panic in the Vancouver Canucks, and they're getting, you know, career years from a lot of players. And the Thatcher Demko injury certainly hurts. We'll see what's up with Elias Lindholm and that future. But I think at the end of it, like, this just flat out a really good team. And it's a really good team at all the key positions here. And, you know, I think that what Tocchet's been able to do, and, you know, he's making players like Elias Pettersson at the beginning of the season instantly accountable, JT Miller as well. And I think that that's the sort of cradle that Vancouver has played in all season long. And I mean, you know, that, Ailish, like, once that's established, then, okay, this is the framework within which I can play. Okay, now I can go and do my job. And I think that's what Vancouver's done all season.
Yeah, our producer, Mike Gentile, made a great point when we were talking about the show beforehand, talking about the four Canadian teams likely going to the playoffs. The Maple Leafs maybe have the best goal scorer. Maybe the Oilers have the best player. The Jets have the best goaltender. And the Vancouver Canucks have the best, well, a couple things. They maybe have the best coach and the best defenseman. and maybe the best group of top six forwards if you really break it down. So Canucks have definitely turned things around, but it's taken a change, at least in terms of who's guiding the ship, I think, with Rick Tocchet for sure.
Yeah, the potential was always there. Like you look at every sports team, really, and you can look at them, and sports teams exist in two states, potential and actual. And for the longest time, this, you know, Vancouver Canucks team existed in the state of potentiality. You know, we looked at all the pieces and said, you know what? There's a really good goaltender. There's a couple of really good defensemen led by someone who's, you know, probably going to win the Norris Trophy this year in Quinn Hughes. There's some really good forwards here. There's an elite player in Elias Pettersson that you can kind of build the entire thing around. They just need some way for all of this to come together. Now, a lot of people have been skeptical about it going back to last summer. I was one of them. I didn't think it was going to come together this quickly for the Vancouver Canucks. But I really got to hand it to Rick Tocchet and what he's been able to do with this team. And again, I understand that health is a major, major factor here. And certainly luck is. Like, you can't have a season like this without a little healthy dose of luck as well. But I think by and large, this is a team that, of all the Canadian squads, you could say is probably the most complete, the one with the fewest amount of questions. I do think there's a really good coach in Winnipeg. I do think there's a really good goaltender in Winnipeg as well. Are they as deep as the Vancouver Canucks? Not so sure about that, but I really do like what they have top six. I do like their third line specifically as well. They do have an underrated defense. You know, Edmonton and Toronto boast the flashy superstars, the guys that'll, you know, bring home hardware and put up big points. But as far as capital T teams go, you're probably looking at Winnipeg and Vancouver as being the two best of the bunch.
You mentioned this President's Trophy race, the Canucks and Rangers on 98 points, Panthers, Avs, Hurricanes, Stars, and Bruins all on 97. Is this the biggest point of intrigue for you, Merrick, heading down the stretch? Like, the President's Trophy matters, but doesn't matter. But with this exception, maybe it matters a little more?
See, I don't think we give the President's Trophy enough credit.
Like, it's cursed, that's
when
why.
When you win the Stanley... Well, there is that, Ailish, and you're 100% right about that. There is that curse. But I think the accomplishment of being the top team after 82 games is something that I don't think we should shrug off. Like, in the postseason, you compete for the Stanley Cup. We all understand, listen, the game gets ratcheted up to a whole different level, and we know how intense it is, and every inch of ice and every hit is for keeps and all those things. They all apply. But in order to win the Stanley Cup, you need a little bit of luck. Some would say you need a lot of luck. You need at least one gimme series that you motor through in four, maybe five. You need wrestling. You need a lot of things to break your way. I mean, this is four rounds of intense, intense hockey. But regular season is a different beast. Like, that's 82 games. Like, nobody goes backwards into winning the President's Trophy. We've seen teams get hot. We've seen goaltenders get streaky. And we've seen teams, like, look at 2019 with the St. Louis Blues. That was just all timing and a hot goaltender. And I don't want to disqualify any of the great players on that team. But we look at that St. Louis Blues team after the 2019 Stanley Cup win, and it's nowhere close to the same. That team got hot at the right time. There's no team that gets hot and wins the President's Trophy. Like, that, you have to have a really solid, consistently good team over 82 games. And it's weird. And maybe, Ailish, it's to your point that it's cursed, and so we don't want to give it, you know, too much credence here. But I really think it's an accomplishment. I really do. When you're the top dog at the end of 82 games, we kind of look at it and go, meh, give me the playoffs. But I really do think it's a big thing, and I think we should celebrate it more than we do.
Talking about a team that can't get hot and win the President's Trophy, that would be the Nashville Predators. They're still not close enough, but they're 15-0-2 in their last 17 games. And if they were closer, we'd probably be looking at those odds. But I want to ask you about your hockey hipster take that's been floating over the airwaves for the last 24 hours. A new name maybe for the Hart Trophy candidacy? Let us know, Merrick.
Roman Josi, this starts with Elliot. Full credit to Elliot, who was the first one to mention it and then started to peel things away with Roman Josi and the Hart Trophy. And, like, listen, I don't think he's going to win it. Like, you're right. Like, this is a Philip Forsberg mustache here. Like, this is the hipster play. Like, make no mistake about it. This is the, well, actually, moment here from yours truly. But, you know, you go back to January 9th, you know, the Nashville Predators start to really turn things around. And who's the one that that's leading the charge every single night. They're 15-0-2 in their last 17. It's a team that now nobody wants to face off in the playoffs. They have two goaltenders, not just Juuse Saros, but Kevin Lankinen as well, who are playing out of their mind right now. You're getting key performances from, Luke Evangelista, who's been phenomenal for this team. Philip Forsberg, that story is well told. Ryan O'Reilly, Gus Nyquist, all these guys as well. Nobody wants to touch this team. Ryan McDonough, maybe the most underrated defenseman in the entire NHL. Everywhere he goes, teammates love him. Teams perform well. He's a winning machine. But the one guy that makes it all work is Roman Josi. And since January 9th, no defender has more points, 22 points in 17 games for Roman Josi. And you look at the end of every night, go look at your game recaps, and there's Roman Josi. Oh, Preds win again. Josi with one goal and two assists, or two goals and two assists, like every single night. Like, he is dragging this team into it and has them in a spot right now where you say to yourself, the two hottest teams in the NHL right now, today, as we have this conversation, are the Colorado Avalanche and the Nashville Predators. And if the playoffs started tonight, that would be your opening round matchup. I'm not so sure the Colorado wants that, given how the Nashville Predators have been playing for the last 17 games. They may be playing the best hockey of any team, and it's a quiet market. I understand that's why it doesn't get a lot of headlines, and that's why you're right, to your point, Ailish, it's the hipster pick, but I think Josi probably gets some consideration. Does he get into the top three? I mean, we're talking about, Nathan MacKinnon, and we're talking about Kucherov, and, we're talking about Connor McDavid. I like making noise always for goaltenders, so I'm going to throw Connor Hellebuck into that conversation always. But don't be surprised if, this momentum picks up here as people start to notice just how good a season Roman Josi is having. And if he gets anywhere close, to winning the Hart Trophy, you'll probably see a scenario where a defenseman doesn't win the Norris but comes close to winning the Hart. That doesn't happen very often.
And doesn't make much sense to me, if we're being honest. I think he maybe should be in the Norris Trophy discussion if he is indeed what he's doing, which is lugging.
I think so too.
Lugging a team to the Stanley Cup playoffs. You're right to mention the Colorado Avalanche. Go ahead.
I think everyone's just already given this thing to Quinn Hughes. Mm-hmm. I think that race is already done.
Yeah, and I was going to say about the Hart Trophy too. This is where the full ballot kind of works against Josi, because everyone's going to have MacKinnon on the ballot. Everyone's going to have Kucherov on the ballot. Everyone's going to have Matthews on the ballot. And it requires everyone to have Josi on the ballot for him to actually win or come close. So if it was first place votes only, maybe Josi would have a chance. Because of the way it works, it's probably unlikely. I do want to go to Colorado because they are like Nashville, sure, winning 90% of their games this month so far. Five-goal comeback over the weekend against the Pittsburgh Penguins. They have, of course, sort of retooled a little bit. Like, it didn't feel like a full retool, but they certainly have over the last 2 years or since winning the Stanley Cup. Do they look as good or maybe better than the team that won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago?
Ooh, I don't know about that. That's a little strong. To me, that team was a beast. That team, like, you watched all those games, and they went into every team like a hog into truffles. They just, like, destroy teams. That team was a machine. I'm not saying that Colorado is as good as that team, but the playing field has very much leveled out, and the competition is very much leveled out. Having said that, it's going to be a war in the Western Conference. Colorado is a fascinating squad, and you're right. That five-goal comeback against the Pittsburgh Penguins on Sunday was spectacular. The Penguins, I'll tell you, the things you're glad you never tweeted, right? So the Penguins go up 4-0 in this one, and I'm like, I'm this close to tweeting, what are the Penguins doing to the Colorado Avalanche? Just picking them apart, wah, 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 and send it off, right? And I'm like, this is Colorado. We've seen them do this before. And then Sean Walker scores. And Ailish, remind me where Sean Walker is from as well. Sorry, Sean
Walker,
your guy scores. Okay, so Sean Walker scores, and I say to myself right away, whew, bullet dodged. Mm. I don't want to be on one of those exposed takes Twitter feeds for that the take on the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Avalanche. And then the ball just gets on rolling. Mm-hmm. And here comes Nathan MacKinnon, who's the closest thing that we have in the NHL to, a rhinoceros on skates. Like, when he gets a full head of steam, good luck. Players just bounce off of him. But I really thought that yesterday's game, Justin, to your point about, they've done this sort of rebuild since winning the Stanley Cup. As it turns out, one of the key pieces is someone that was a really, you know, kind of a controversial hire. And that was Jonathan Drouin. Mm-hmm. You know, he's had a hard time finding a spot, finding a place. There was a lot of controversy with Drouin, certainly in Tampa, never really got a foothold in Montreal. And that's, as we know, a really tough market for any player. And specifically, if you're an underperforming French-Canadian hockey player, it can be brutal. And it was for Jonathan Drouin. A lot of people stuck their neck out for Drouin in Colorado, and Exhibit A is Nathan MacKinnon. And I thought yesterday's game by Drouin was probably the best that I've seen him play with the Avalanche. Mind you, I haven't seen every game that the Avalanche have played, but I've seen the majority of them. And for me, that was the best game that Jonathan Drouin has played all season long. MacKinnon was MacKinnon. I mean, he's phenomenal. He's the for me, and I think a lot of people, he's the leader for the Hart Trophy this season. But you look at what Drouin, I mean, Drouin is an outstanding playmaker, and if you look at that finishing sequence in overtime where he makes Chris Letang, to be blunt, he made Chris Letang look old on that play. It was really tough to watch. I mean, it's been tough to watch Letang ever since Gensel got traded, because it seems as if amongst all the Pittsburgh Penguins players, he seems to be taking this, you know, waving the white flag of the Pittsburgh Penguins the hardest. Mm-hmm. But Drouin burned him hard on the outside and then cut across and slid it home. That was the overtime game winner. Drouin's been outstanding. It's still a very mobile defense, a team that moves the puck well, led by a couple of elite players. I think Mikko Rantanen doesn't get his flowers enough. It's an impressive team. As good as they were 2 years ago, though, not so sure about that. But that doesn't mean they can't win the Stanley Cup this year. They are still that good.
We're chatting with Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Last one for you, Merrick. Two new members of the 50 Gold Club, Hyman and Sam Reinhardt, on this past weekend, I think almost in the same hour. Let's talk Hyman, though, because of this market specifically, and seeing him almost do it against the Maple Leafs, which would have been too good of a storyline for us, of course. So I guess just his evolution as a player, I don't know if you ever believed that Zach Hyman would get to 50, but seeing him do so and being one of the hardest working, maybe underrated players to get there.
Never thought he would get 50, and I hate to be that guy on your show, but I'm going to be that guy. I remember watching him play in the OJ with Hamilton, and we always said, like, look, he works hard. I remember having a conversation with someone. I said, like, yeah, he really works hard, and someone said to me, yeah, it looks like he's working hard because he can't skate. Everybody who can't skate looks like they're working hard. Look at the Sutter family, for crying out loud. But he was an incredibly hard worker, always has been. The thing about Hyman is that he has this incredible work ethic. I was making this point on the podcast and on the radio show today. We've all seen players that are young phenoms, and we've played with many of them. You know, players that just by way of their natural skill when they're like 8, 9, 10 years old are just faster than everybody, or maybe someone's bigger than everybody, and that's how they dominate. And you get up to a certain level, and eventually that advantage that you're playing with goes away. It vanishes. And if you don't have hard work or a work ethic that comes along with that skill, you're kind of left with nothing, and you're kind of left with becoming a frustrated hockey player. I think we all have had people in our lives around hockey that we look at and say, wow, they were the best when they were 11. What happened? Mm. Well, the thing about Hyman is he always tried to outwork his deficiencies, and it's finally come together. Now, he needed coaches along the way that believed in him, and the big one for Zach Hyman was Mike Babcock. And, you know, I would imagine that Babcock would have seen him at Michigan back when he was playing, you know, that final year with Dylan Larkin, and, you know, always remember, like, there's something there with Zach Hyman, put him in a great spot with Toronto, an incredibly difficult spot, too. You think it's, you know, easy playing with superstars. Ask anyone who's tried it. It's not necessarily true. And Babcock believed in him. I don't know what he did in a previous life to deserve playing with Dylan Larkin in Michigan and then Austin Matthews in Toronto.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And then Connor McDavid in Edmonton. Like I was saying today, like, did he like save like a dozen puppies out of a burning house in a previous life to deserve like all this goodness in his life right now? I think everyone's thrilled for him. You saw the reaction of the Oilers. Everybody loves this guy because I think everybody respects the work that he's put in to get to this spot, to put him in a place where he could score 50 goals in a season. And that shows, and he talked about it, said, look, I just try to do good things every day, and eventually good things come back. In his interview with Gene Principe, which was beautiful, everybody's happy for him. Like, how are you not happy for Zach Hyman scoring 50 goals? I don't care if you're a Calgary Flames fan, you hate the Oilers. If you just, like, you know, lose the crest and focus on the name bar, you can be happy for Zach Hyman. I think everybody is. I suspect you two are. I know I am. I think everybody around hockey is just thrilled that he's got 50.
Yeah, it was a good feel-good story. Sometimes you need that in sports. So we appreciate you sharing it with us as well. Jeff, we'll let you go.
Go ahead. And just a really, really good point, too. Like, you just like it because he's at the end of it, he's a really good person,
yes,
too.
Yes, it matters.
You know, he's like a really good person from a really good family. Like, he's just like a really good, honest, decent person. Like, amazing. An amazing sports story with a really good, decent person. I love it.
There you go.
It's rare. Enjoy it.
Thanks, Jeff. We'll definitely chat with you next week and have a good one. We'll catch up soon.
Chat in 7 days.
That was Jeff Merrick on our Merrick Mondays. We went through a lot with Merrick, and the Zach Hyman thing was very sweet. We were in attendance on Saturday night when the Leafs and Oilers were playing, which ended up being a bit closer than we anticipated halfway through the game. But he didn't get his 50 then. He got his 50 the next day. So Leafs fans were kind of torn about which way to go on that one.
Yeah, it felt like it was definitely going to happen in Toronto. Definitely going to happen this weekend, though, I guess, in Ontario. Makes some sense as well. But yeah, I mean, everything Merrick said is right. I think you could echo those things. Like, this is a guy who is as committed as anyone, and that commitment has taken him an unbelievably far away and longer than probably anyone ever had him pegged for. And that's a credit to him. It's a credit to the work ethic. And it's a credit to, you know, who he's playing with, right? Like, I don't know if he's scoring 50 playing on the line with just anyone, but 50 goals is 50 goals in any league. And congratulations to Zach Hyman.
When we speak about accomplishments and great things that happened this weekend, there's really nothing bigger than the Burlington Barracudas Senior A Tier 1 champions.
What's on the top of the trophy?
So, unfortunately, we broke our trophy, but we did win. I'd like to give a shout-out to my hardworking Cudas ladies. We did it. We are the champs. We did break the trophy in our celebratory moment, but it's got some grit to it. It's hard-earned. It means a lot. So we're going to put this right here on the table where it belongs.
There you go.
Justin came to watch.
For Hyman's 49th, in attendance for Ailish Forfar on Sunday. No lie.
Who does?
Not a mistake made on the ice by Ailish Forfar in that game. To know Ailish Forfar is to see her in a championship game kind of makes a lot of sense.
Well, you know, it's a championship. We don't mess around. We're out there to win and get home and get to work.
There you go.
So, yes, Cudas big champs this year. This actually, we have our best bets coming up here. The Cudas are now back-to-back champions. I'm seeing the line early here for a three-peat champion at around plus 300. I'm not sure if you're putting your money in on that one, but
I suggest
it could be
everyone
done.
Does. I don't like tying my money up for 12 months, but I feel like that's one everyone should be making.
So, yeah, Cudas plus 300 to three-peat. That's next year. We'll get to that a little closer. And we do have provincials still. We'll get you the lines on provincials. But I'm going to give you my best bet of the night, and we're sticking with the girl power theme. It is Caitlin Clark. Iowa's got an 8-seed West Virginia opponent tonight. They're 14.5-point favorites. But Caitlin Clark has done it all in her career except for win an NCAA championship and get a triple-double in the tournament. Only 17 players have done it so far. And she's got 17 in her career. I think it'd be great for her to get her 18th tonight against West Virginia. So let's give a Caitlin Clark triple-double a little money tonight.
I'm kind of debating whether I like this or not, but it's in the system already. Canucks and Kings over 5.5. David Riddick is in goal. Casey DeSmith is at the opposite end for the Vancouver Canucks. Not the best goaltenders, and it's 5.5 for that reason. Taking the over. Could get loose. Maybe the Canucks puck line as well. And just on the President's Trophy talk, Carolina Hurricanes have the easiest schedule among the teams that are involved down the stretch. They are plus 700 in some spots, so I kind of like that as well.
All right. We're going to have a lot more in our show. We're going to have Ben Nicholson-Smith, who's probably outside the door waiting to get in to talk opening week here at MLB, and we've got Shohei news to still ponder through. We also have, weirdly enough, a Toronto Raptors player out of the lineup tonight due to an NBA investigation in prop betting involving him. We do have our Raptors pregame show at 7 o'clock. So lots to come on the show. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on the Fan pregame. Woo!
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the Fan pregame. SportsCenter, SportsNet 590, The Fan. As a reminder, at 7 o'clock, we'll shift over to 590 to do our Raptors pregame show. But I did give you a quick piece of information, which I'll give you more of, about Jontay Porter of the Toronto Raptors, who will not be in the lineup tonight following an NBA investigation on betting irregularities over the past several months. ESPN sharing this today. So the game of January 26th against the Clippers increased betting interest for the under on Porter props. That night, Porter played just 4 minutes before leaving the game due to what the Raptors said was a re-aggravation of an eye injury he suffered 4 days earlier. He did not score in the game against the Clippers, had only 3 rebounds, 1 assist, and did not attempt a three, meaning the under hit on all of his props. The next day, as part of the daily report to users on betting results, DraftKings Sportsbook reported that the under on Jontay Porter's three-pointers was the biggest money winner for bettors of any NBA player prop from that evening. So we will get into that a bit further when we talk to Smith and Jones, but that's the latest report from ESPN why Jontay Porter will not be in the Raptors lineup tonight as they take on the Nets at 7:30, which we will talk about in a bit. Let's bring in Ben Nicholson-Smith, though, to talk some MLB. It's opening week, Ben. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Yeah, good times. I mean, these are kind of some wild skills we're seeing across sports.
Yeah, I mean, we were going to save Shohei till the end of the Blue Jays discussion. So let's just start with Shohei, who came out today through an interpreter, not Ipe, basically giving his side of the story on things. I mean, does it tie up loose ends for you? I mean, he distanced himself from Ipe, from gambling. I don't think we were expecting anything else, but did we learn anything today from Shohei Ohtani's comments?
I guess we learned a little bit. I still think there's so many loose ends with this story. It's just, you know, so much that we don't know when it comes to Shohei Ohtani and everything that goes that went on there with Ipe Mizuhara, the interpreter. Ultimately, Shohei is denying any involvement. He's denying that he bet on sports. He's denying that he knew about this as it was unfolding. That's not a surprise to me. I think his strongest legal case is probably going to be to sidestep that and put it on someone else. So we'll see where it leads, but I still have a lot of questions here.
I don't have any more Shohei questions.
We have questions, not for Ben.
Not that Ben has the answer of. How
no,
about that?
I definitely do not. I wish I did, but
yeah,
I do not.
We read some of the statement earlier on, and if our listeners miss it, we can circle back afterwards. But Shohei did talk through an interpreter and basically said that he was sad and shocked, did not make any payments, and that Ipe was stealing and was telling lies. So, bit messy. Let's talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. Today, we led with Gausman as well because he had a great performance, something I think Blue Jays fans were really hoping for and anticipating because of his injury. So, what would the plan be moving forward after what you saw from Gausman today?
Honestly, he looked great. This was a huge step, I think, for the Jays to just have him out there, on a mound. For the first time all spring, you think about how much time most pitchers need, right? It's 6-7 weeks. And Gausman, on the very final day of spring training, goes out there and looks great. Like, he was up 95, 96. I thought his slider was at least across the plate for strikes. His splitter looked great. I mean, he's facing a pretty decent Pirates lineup. It's at least a major league team and getting great results. So to me, that is massive. It actually changes my outlook on this team. Not to be too hyperbolic with it, but you know, you go from Mitch White as your number five to Kevin Gausman, that's a pretty big swing. So he's in all likelihood going to have to check on his shoulder tomorrow, see how he feels when he wakes up, and then go from there. Don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but if he does feel okay, and he certainly looked okay in that start against the Pirates, then that would line him up to start the fifth day of the season, maybe 4 or 5 innings.
So no reservations then for allowing Gausman, who's not fully stretched out, to just stretch himself out during regular season games.
Yeah, it's an unusual approach, to say the least. And I think if this was a lesser pitcher, you wouldn't see it because, I mean, it's not the way you draw it up at all. Ultimately, Kevin Gausman is a really, really good, experienced, established major league pitcher. So I think that they can maybe get away with some things and have a bit more confidence in him than they would have in your standard pitcher. So I think if you're Pete Walker and John Schneider right now, you're kind of like, let's do this. Let's just see what happens and hope that it works out.
Okay, let's round out the rotation then. What do you anticipate the next couple months look like for Alek Manoah?
Yeah, it's an ongoing buildup for Alek Manoah. It's been a slow process, right? We all know that. It's been since August 10th of last year that he was in a game that really counted and just pitched briefly in spring. So he's building up. The plan was for him to go into a live setting where he's facing some hitters, and that can be a good next step for Manoah. But I think even if everything were to go really well at this point, as we sit here at the end of March, I mean, probably beginning of May would be best case scenario. He's, you know, five innings, major league ready. Obviously, we've seen with Manoah, it hasn't often gone on that ideal path of late.
Not obviously worth comparing to Gausman, but it feels like, you know, it's not going to be the same quick result, right? Like, there's a professionalism, not that Alec Manoah is not a professional, but Gausman, you can kind of bank. Like, if he's dealing with something, you're going to figure it out. With Manoah, there's so many other questions surrounding him, and I guess it's reflected in what we're seeing, at least in terms of timeline and preparedness for the year. Rounding out the roster, Vogelbach, Clement, Schneider all make the team. What is the more interesting part of that story, or at least the final additions or additions to the roster before the Blue Jays come back up north?
Yeah, I do think that Daniel Vogelbach's a pretty interesting player. You certainly don't see players like that on every roster. And what I mean when I say players like that, obviously, is just a pure slugger. Like, he should not and will not play defense. He essentially won't run the bases. This is a one-dimensional baseball player, but his one dimension is good, so you want him on your team. I think in a sport where you have 26 roster spots, having a specialist like this is totally fine, and I think that he can excel in that role for a little bit. We'll see what happens once Joey Votto's healthy and ready to roll. You know, you're not going to have both those guys on the roster at the same time, obviously, but for now, I think he gets some shots and might actually help this group.
What do you think is going to happen with Joey Votto? The injury obviously kind of took some steam away from that story, but do you think he's on the outside looking in for a while, or is he going to be able to fight himself back into a debate between him and Vogelbach?
I think he can push himself right back in that mix. I think as long as he's healthy, the ankle has sidelined him, obviously, for the last 8 days. So really not ideal. Just as he's getting healthy, he rolls his ankle. But if he can get in enough at-bats, he's a little bit more of a dynamic player in that you can have him face righties and lefties. You can have him play first base. Even at 40, there's just like a little bit more that you can do there with Joey Votto. And I think clearly his ceiling is higher than what you're getting from Vogelbach. So to me, I've always thought once you sign Joey Votto, he's going to have the chance to play himself off this team. I still think that applies. He has to get healthy first, but I think once he is, that will lead to maybe a tough decision around Vogelbach.
Recent setbacks for Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson at spring training. How would you assess the state of the bullpen on the week of opening day?
Well, not great at all. At this point, you know, you lose your closer, you lose your top setup reliever. Yeah, it's pretty rough. So they have some real questions there. And I'm curious to see what they do to kind of backfill. I think they still have enough to get by with Jimmy Garcia, Chad Green, Tim Meza. You can kind of mix and match to start things off. And I think that that will help them, you know, if they do have some leads, then should be able to secure them in theory. So, you know, that's the hope, right? But yeah. I think that this is one of the bigger questions, one of the bigger weak spots on the team right now is just what that bullpen looks like.
There's no promises that it's not going to happen again, but is this the best time for that to happen with at least a healthy bullpen or fresh arms? Not healthy, fresh arms where, you know, not everyone's taxed in August. All of a sudden you lose these two guys. Like, that could be the death knell.
Yeah, I sort of agree because, you know, at this point, you know, okay, 4 or 5 days ahead of the games that count. All right, maybe you just ease up on Tim Meza. Like, he pitched today briefly. But you probably weren't going to let him go. He's not going to go through a 30-pitch bullpen tomorrow. I can pretty much guarantee you that. And it gives you just a little bit of time to plan. And the wrinkle in this that's really interesting is what they do with Yariel Rodriguez, the Cuban pitcher that they signed for $32 million because, you know, developmentally, it's not really ideal for him to make his adjustment as a mop-up man in a big league bullpen, but he's probably within their top 8 relievers. So on talent, there's actually a pretty strong case. I think they should probably roster him.
We heard a lot about internal improvement being the theme of this upcoming year, and maybe there's some players that you would put on, you know, your ranking of best ability to have a breakout season. Who would you put the top of your candidate to make some major strides that hopefully the Blue Jays are banking on?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going to need some guys to kind of step up in that direction. I think for me, I'd probably go to Dalton Varsho as one, just given we know how good he's going to be defensively. Really hard for me to imagine that he's not a really good defensive outfielder again next year. And then you mix in a guy who's historically been at least okay offensively. I mean, last year wasn't the case, but it, with Arizona, he actually was a pretty decent offensive player. So you combine those in theory for a guy who's just 27 years old, like, I don't know. I feel like there's a real path there to a very productive season. So that's where I would go.
Mm-hmm. The Athletic wasn't so kind with its offseason grade for the Toronto Blue Jays assessing the group a D. Would you be as harsh as a D-level offseason for the Blue Jays?
Well, no, I wouldn't be that harsh. I would say C minus. What about you guys?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's not higher than this. Maybe I give them a C. Maybe I'm a fair,
yeah, maybe C,
a nicer grader. My parents are both teachers, so I like, you know,
it's not to cop out. I think I'm in a C minus. Like, C seems.
Well, so how about this? It's hard to not grade without looking at what the AL East did, or look around the league, right? In a vacuum, but the Jays got a D, and the Orioles got an A, and the Yankees got a B. And, you know, whether you agree with that range or not.
If it's on a bell curve, maybe it's more fair, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the Orioles go out and they get a legitimate number one starter, which they needed. The Yankees, it's not a perfect offseason, but if we're doing the bell curve, I mean, well, Juan Soto, I mean, that's a legitimate guy. So maybe it's more fair when looking at that. But last one before we got to let you go, because we got Mike Halford waiting in the queue. Where are the Blue Jays in the AL East hierarchy for you?
Yankees are the best to me still. After that, I might say the Orioles are good, but the Orioles, look at the back of their rotation. It's like Tyler Wells and Cole Irvin. It's not like amazing, amazing, you know, starting pitchers 1-5. So, and they option one of their best hitters. So, you know, we'll see how that, where that leads. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the Jays are in that mix. I'm going to go, I want to change. I'm going to go C minus still for the answer. It wasn't a good off. We all know it wasn't a good offseason.
It was a playoff team last year. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, if we're doing where they are in the AL East, it's not the same as the offseason.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because I think right now they are a good team. There's no question they're a good baseball team. We'll see what happens. And yeah, I mean, it's, that's hard to predict, obviously.
Breaking new Looney Dogs records this year?
I will leave that to you.
Okay, Irish. I'm working on it. Getting my name in there already, because you guys had the beat last year. I'm trying to put myself in as Looney Dog correspondent. Ben Nicholson-Smith, it's opening week. We appreciate you jumping in today. And it's going to be lots of fun. MLB writer here at Sportsnet.ca, and of course at the Letters Podcast. I know you were on Jay's Talk today. Plus already coming out. We got changes, but you're going to be all over our ears and eyes for the next a couple months, so get ready.
maybe everyone else is the ones who should be getting ready. Yeah,
there you go. BNS, appreciate you jumping on. Thanks so much. Okay, Mike Alford's also going to join us in a couple moments here. We have a big night ahead for the Vancouver Canucks, the LA Kings, 9 o'clock on Sportsnet. So let's bring in our ears from Vancouver, Mike Alford, host of Halford and Brough on Sportsnet 650. Mike, how's it going?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're doing all right. We're like just piecing through a lot of weird scandals in sports, but the Canucks, no scandal there. They're just elite hockey team, and they're doing it. They don't care if people love the Canucks or not. They're at the top of the roster, at the top of the rankings, and they could clinch a playoff spot tonight. Does it feel believable over there in Vancouver?
It was funny. We were talking about this morning, because last year we were discussing load management in a totally different way. It was like, they should load manage guys so they don't play and they won't get as many points, and therefore we'll have a higher tank rating for the draft. And now all of a sudden we're doing playoff matchups and first round opponents, poll questions on who the Canucks are going to face, how many guys they can rest over the final 11. So there's been some pinch me moments throughout the year. This morning for sure, because we actually had the stat where if they win in any regulation or overtime or shootout and the Blues lose it all, they actually can physically clinch a spot. So it could all come to, like, the dream could become a reality tomorrow, and I don't know what it'll feel like then.
Yeah, I'm glad there was a reflection point today, because I feel like, if, you know, I was thinking about what it'd be like to be a Canucks fan this season, and I guess I was thinking, like, a process of retraining your brain and kind of reworking takes on everything that you've seen for the last couple of years, because, yeah, there's been change, obviously, but I think there were pretty hard stances on some really important and influential people with this team who were maybe doing questionable work and all of a sudden are doing really bang up jobs. Like, what's it been like sort of, I guess, you know, readjusting how you felt about everything that involves the Canucks this entire season?
Well, it's shocking because there was zero proof of concept for any of these guys, any of the management and the coaching staff prior to this season. Like, the tail end of last season when Tuckett took over, everything was just like, well, yeah, the games are meaningless, though, and you're playing up the string, and we've seen some improvement in terms of what it looks like, but is it really translatable to high-stakes hockey, playoff hockey, meaningful games in March. And then it just sort of happened right from the get. I mean, the season started in such a shocking fashion when they sort of, like, undermined the Edmonton Oilers' start to their season and sent the Oilers on this tailspin that involved that ended with Jay Woodcroft getting fired. And then the Canucks just kind of kept going and going and going. And it went from being, oh, this is cool, wait for the regression, to, well, maybe the regression won't be as big as we think, to, well, now there's not even the regression happening. There's been blips along the way. I think there's only been one three-game losing streak all season. Like, it's just been this consistent, like, good times, positive vibes. Injuries have been minimal. I mean, when you think about the loss of Demko and Joshua being the two only real injuries of significance, and Carson Soucy's missed time, I mean, everything's kind of hit the right note and clicked, and they bought into what Tocchet was selling, and, you know, all the acquisitions, except maybe Lindholm, have really paid off. Huge. So it's been oddly un-Vancouver for everything to be going well. So now we're just waiting for the bottom to fall out.
So. Okay, so let's get, yeah, I wanted to get to that. Let's get to something that is Vancouver. Like, what is providing angst right now? Like, it can't be all just good times rolling. There's got to be something, whether it's just the expectation that it shouldn't be this way. What is providing angst for Canucks fans at this moment?
Probably the matchup. Probably whoever it'll be in the first round, although right now it looks overwhelmingly like it'll be one of Vegas or Los Angeles. And Los Angeles came into Vancouver a couple weeks ago and really smothered the Canucks. And I don't know how much Kings hockey you guys watch, but I'd recommend, unless you have insomnia, don't bother watching it because it's exceptionally boring. Like, you'll see it tonight. Mm. If they play the way that they are most successful, it's super low event hockey. It's like, let's make sure that nobody has over 20 shots in this game, and, you know, it 2-1, 3-2, get it to overtime, whatever. That's successful Kings hockey. Vegas is obviously Vegas. It's such a fascinating story. Like, I'm still quietly pining away that they'll fall out of the picture. It seems really unlikely, but if they lose to St. Louis tonight, you know, who knows, all bets are kind of off at that point. But it's a matchup for sure, because Colorado, I mean, if you're going to go further down the road as to what the hiccup could be in the playoffs, Colorado looks lethal. Edmonton's always very scary. I don't know what to think of Nashville. They haven't lost a game since Barry Trotz stole their U2 concert away. So there's a lot of different roadblocks along the way. But that's really it, is it? What's that matchup going to be in the first round and or beyond? Because while the Canucks have had a good year, there's some very, very, very difficult teams in the West.
We could be seeing that potential first-round matchup tonight, Canucks and Kings, 9 p.m. on Sportsnet. We were saying the other day that maybe U2 should be Nashville's new win song when they just keep pouring out wins. Just play a U2 song, and maybe just like a little bit of internal angst as well that keeps you motivated. Last one for you, Mike. Appreciate your time tonight. Let's say they have to look through all the West. Like, you know, the West, I think we are looking at as like Goliath, because there's so many big teams. Do you think that that's going to be like a grind when you get to the Stanley Cup playoffs? The Western Conference has just been harder to get through, and that team might be crawling to the finish line. When you look at the East, it looks like there's maybe one or two major competitors. Is that something that you're looking that far ahead at, or are we just getting a little greedy?
No, I mean, it's just such a tough road. Like, we're talking about now clinching, and then would there be, like, theoretically, would you start to rest guys maybe, I don't know, with five or six games left in the regular season? But then you realize the significance of finishing first in your division, and then maybe trying to finish as high as the Western Conference standings so you can have home ice advantage for as long as possible. Because I mentioned, like, Colorado's on a 9-game winning streak, and I think that they really remodeled themselves in an aggressive and impressive way at the deadline. You've got Vegas is like just lurking in the weeds as one of the two wild cards, and probably the second wild card if Hurdle jumps into the lineup and is effective as many expect him to be. If Mark Stone comes back for game one of the playoffs, they become a fundamentally different team, and that's a real, I mean, they're obviously the defending Stanley Cup champions, so there's a huge issue there. And then there's these other teams that we just sort of forget about, like Dallas is a 93-point team right now. They're also very good, and they've got a really like elite level makeup with, you know, Robertson and Hintz and Heiskanen and Ottinger. And then you look at Winnipeg, and it's like, right, Winnipeg can lock it down with anyone. They might have the best goal in the NHL. So it is the high end is very high, and it makes it very intriguing when you say, you know, if you get a favorable matchup, if you get one in the first round, it gets really difficult from there on in. And I think it's going to be really like fascinating and fun, but at the same time, it's very terrifying as a Canucks fan that you know that there's these big challenges ahead.
We got to run, Mike, but enjoy the show tomorrow. If the Canucks can get the job done, I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think U2 still play in Vancouver, right? We'll talk about this after the break, but U2, Nashville coming in, it sounds like maybe that should happen.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate
Mike
it.
Mike Alford.
Yeah, Alford, we're talking maybe first round playoff matchup tonight, Vancouver, LA Kings, 9 p.m. on Sportsnet. That's our big one tonight.
Yeah, I can't get Streets of No Name out of my head now. I need that to happen. Nashville comes in night one playoffs.
Could be on something. We're going to take a quick break. We've got 30 more minutes up on Sportsnet 590 The Fan to talk about the Brooklyn Nets in town, play the Toronto Raptors, and the scandal that is pending confirmation. We'll get to it. Take a quick break.